Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Geek Buddies here on a Saturday, but it's also an episode of Geek Bites. Really, it's a mixture of both that we're doing here on this Saturday, but we're doing this because my brother is back from Japan, and we are excited to talk with him about X-Men 97 Episode 5 and talk about all stuff that happened at Comic-Con and get some thoughts on the Joker trailer and the Star Wars Outlaws trailer. So there's a lot we're going to cover here on the show. But first, let's introduce ourselves. I'm the Outlaw John Roker, writer, producer, and host here on the Geek Buddies.
Watashi wa Maikaru.
What's that mean? What does that mean?
It means I'm Michael. I'm Michael. Oh, I'm Michael Vogel.
Oh, nice. So you're still in that mindset. So we welcome him back. Thanks, Michael, coming back from 10 days in Japan. How was it? How was the experience? Did you enjoy it? What did you see? Anything you can say about your experience there?
Oh my gosh, we could do a whole Geek Bites episode on it, but we got so much stuff to cover. It was great. I had a blast. It was amazing. I love Japan. What we did, the quick rundown was left on Monday, landed on Tuesday, checked into the Tokyo Disneyland Hotel. Wednesday did Tokyo Disneyland. Thursday did Tokyo Disney Sea. Friday took the train to Kyoto, toured temples in Kyoto on Saturday. On Sunday, took the train to Nara, fed some crazy deer. Went back to Kyoto. Monday morning, took the train to Tokyo. Went to a bunch of museums. Went to the Miyazaki Museum. Did a bunch of stuff. Ran around Tokyo. Drank in a lot of bars. Went to the gay bars. Met some gay boys. Had a good time. And then came back on Friday and did the weird Japanese time travel thing where I flew out Friday at 7:30 p.m. And then I landed at 2 o'clock p.m. on Friday. So I actually went back in time. Nice. And now I'm here, and we're doing this Geek Bites when we're still in the jet lag phase, so I'm not quite sure how it's going to go, but I definitely wanted to talk about this episode of X-Men, so here we are.
Yeah, that's the big reason why we're doing this. So, you know, Shannon obviously doing the main show a couple of days ago, but we're doing this one today because I wanted to wait to review X-Men 97 Episode 5 with Michael because of the subject matter that is covered, and because of how Bo DeMeo has spoken about the episode and what motivated him to write the episode online. Shannon, unfortunately, couldn't join us on the Saturday, so this is the way it's going to be for today. But the three of us will be back together starting next week again, now that Michael is back from Japan, so don't worry about it. But we're going to get to X-Men 97 Episode 5 a little bit later on in the show. I wanted to get some initial thoughts here from Michael about some of the stuff that happened here at CinemaCon. Not sure if you were paying attention to any of it, Michael. I know you were in Japan or reading up on this stuff, but a lot of Marvel news dropped here. We had Thunderbolts, a new title with an asterisk, clearly trolling me. We also had this other stuff going on here. We got 9 minutes of footage of Deadpool and Wolverine. Apparently Deadpool is selling used cars now. He's going through a midlife crisis. Wolverine and the TVA bring him back in, and they're supposed to go and go on these adventures and save the world and save the people that he loves. We also got Captain America New World Order. Apparently it is going to be Anthony Mackie, Sam putting the Avengers back together at the behest of the president, who is, of course, Harrison Ford now as Thunderbolt Ross. And those are the things that kind of got on there. Plus, we got a new Superman logo. So let me talk first about the Marvel stuff. What are your thoughts when you hear this stuff? Are you excited about it? Most people coming out of it, 9 minutes of footage, felt it was pretty great. 9 minutes of footage. Does this excite you? What are your thoughts on all of it?
Yeah, you know, I think in order of excitement, I think I'm already excited for Deadpool and Wolverine. And it's everything they said about the footage that they showed sounds like exactly what I want it to sound like. Like there wasn't, I don't think that with the Deadpool Wolverine footage, there wasn't any like earth shattering reveals or news.
Right.
But just tonally, I love Kevin Feige coming out and saying it's a fucking great movie and he can say fucking now because Deadpool is R-rated. Like, you know, I think they're having a lot of fun with the fact that you know, you and a lot of other people were concerned about is when, and this has been the concern since Bob Iger bought Marvel, but Marvel going to get Disney-fied? Is Marvel going to get Disney-fied? And then with Deadpool coming over, well, is Deadpool going to get watered down? And I think they're kind of going out of their way to not only say not Deadpool's not getting watered down, but they're kind of having fun with it. Like a lot of the jokes within Deadpool, within the footage they showed, were very Disney specific jokes. Or Kevin Feige says that cocaine's the one thing that's off the table. You know, like lots of fun little jibes. And even the stuff about the popcorn buckets coming out. Like they're like, oh, you thought the Dune popcorn buckets were bad. Wait until you see what we've got. So I think Marvel is at their best when they are having fun.
Yes.
And this just looks like they're having fun. So that all sounded great. But of the three things, that was the one that I was like, okay, that's all good. We're about to see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Great. The Thunderbolts asterisk has me very curious. I do feel like they are trolling John Rocha.
No. But yeah, it's a change of logo. A lot of people are speculating this could be Dark Avengers. Do you think you put the asterisk there to get people like excited by the mystery of it, or do you think they really do have a plan to kind of turn this on its head and make it not a Thunderbolts movie, but a completely different movie, and thereby kind of proving my point that this Thunderbolts movie was never going to be made? But yeah, what do you think here?
I think if I had to just guess in the blue right now, given the asterisk and given what we've heard of the Cap 4 footage that we saw, I think both movies are dealing with the fact that we don't have a superhero team in the MCU. And I think that maybe Thunderbolts asterisk is that, like, does that start out with them becoming the event? Like, this is going to be the new Avengers team, and you have to be the Avengers, and you have to be the Avengers. And then we've already heard, and everybody hated it on Twitter, the news that Thunderbolts was like the name of like Yelena's soccer team or something like that. But is that, is this like Yelena Belova being like, fuck you guys, we're going to be our own team, and they become that, you know? Like, I think that the whole concept of a government-run superhero team, I feel like is going to be in the mix. So I think the asterisk is maybe what the team that's put together in this movie is at the beginning is not the Thunderbolts, is called, whether it's the Avengers, whether it's something else, but like you are a government-sanctioned team. And the asterisk is this team, when they really become a team, says, fuck you guys, we're going to go do our own thing, or something like that.
Okay. I like that speculation, actually. Yeah.
And then I think, you know, I got a lot of hope in Cap 4. I really want this movie to be the movie that turns the MCU around, the live action MCU. I think the animation MCU is doing just fine right now. But like, I think that for the MCU at large, we as we've been talking about for months and months, like we're all like, okay, where are we going? What are we doing? And the idea of President Ross wanting to put a government-sanctioned Avengers team together really makes a ton of sense. I mean, this is what they've been trying to do since Civil War. I mean, the Sokovia Accords, everything else was like, we want the government to tell you what to do. And even the idea that Sam is against this, and that Ross says, you're not Steve Rogers, just do your job. Like that vibe is the vibe that I want for this movie. I want this movie to dive into what it's like. I mean, what I know Falcon and Winter Soldier kind of touched on a lot of this, but I want this movie to double down on what it means for a black man to become Captain America, what it means for Sam Wilson to step into Steve Rogers' shoes, him trying to do what Steve would do and being told he's not Steve Rogers. Like, all of these elements make me really, really interested in what this movie could be. And I think them sort of dealing head on with there are no Avengers. Like, I think that if this all works, which I hope it does, I think a lot of us will be like, this is all great. I wish you had done this at the end of phase four into phase five. Like, I wish that this had picked up earlier, but all of the stuff that they're showing, you know, these are the movies. It's Deadpool, Thunderbolts, and Cap 4 and Fantastic Four that got to do a lot of heavy lifting to get us excited about the live action MCU again. So I think the Cap 4 footage has me the most intrigued, the asterisk, and then Deadpool Wolverine, but all of it sounds really great.
Yeah, so looking at it, and as you're talking here, my mind starts to go to this place. If we saw the end of the Marvels, we saw that Kamala Khan was putting together the Young Avengers with Kate Bishop there, and where they're going to go from there, we don't know. But like, do you think that they're maybe pushing that aside and just focusing on this for now, as this being two maybe competing super teams? And then they'll get back to that? Or do you think they're just kind of not going to forget you saw that? We're moving on in this direction. What do you think is going to happen with that? Plus, we still have the plan, for God's sakes. Yeah.
I think their plan is still absolutely to have a Young Avengers. I mean, okay. I think that in the absence of, because I don't, listen, however Cap 4 goes, I don't know that we're going to have a government-sanctioned Avengers team. I think the whole point of the good Avengers point. Yeah, and the right. superheroes in general is we do what we do because it's the right thing to do. We are not the government team. So I think right. that, you know, there might, we might get to the end of Cap 4. There still might not be an Avengers team. Like that might be a thing, but you might have whatever the Thunderbolts becomes. And then I think with the Young Avengers, I think there's a lot of interesting story there too. As far, I mean, obviously there's characters that are beloved that we want to see, Teddy and Billy and everyone else. But I think the idea, and they touched on this in the comics a few years ago
yeah.
with a big storyline. Does the government really want to have a bunch of young kids running around saving the world? Like yeah. probably not. Do other superheroes think it's okay for young kids to be running around as a super team? Like yeah. this was touched on a lot in the kind of death of Kamala Khan and like a bunch of the things they did in the comics where there was a government, there was a law that was passed that was like, you can't be an underage superhero. So I think they could do the Young Avengers and there could be a lot of story there too. So it seems like as we're driving towards the eventual Secret Wars and everything, yeah. the goal, it looks like, has always been in the absence of the Avengers, in the absence of Tony and Steve and Bruce and Natasha yeah. and Clint, everyone's trying to fill those shoes. And those are really big shoes to fill. And having a bunch of different teams trying to do that,
yeah.
leading towards Secret Wars and Battle World and everything else, makes sense for where they would want to go.
That just seems a lot, man. And, you know, they had trouble with the multiverse. They had trouble with all these last few films. Seems like a lot to put all these teams together, have them moving around. I hope they can pull it off. And maybe they're bringing people back who, you know, have a little more of a handle on how to tell a bigger story, but while also being specific within the separate movies. So I'm curious to see. But, you know, I feel like, look, we had a run. Some of the movies worked. Some of the movies didn't. Some of the shows worked. Some of the shows didn't. Now let's see what happens, right? This is not, I saw some people coming after me, oh, being a shill for liking the Silver Surfer casting and all of that. But it's not about that. It's like you've got to live in a state of constant hope or else you're just fucking depressed all the time and then waiting for it to fail all the time. That's no way to exist in life, for God's sake. So, yes, they made mistakes. There were some things that I liked from the most recent stuff, and there's some things that I didn't like. Okay, we move on. Let's see what they can do. Maybe they're course correcting. We have to give them a chance to course correct and then see what the results are going to be. And if they knock it out of the park, this period is going to be very, just very much in the back of our minds as we move forward with a lot more faith. So,
I think the internet has a plethora of people and sites and channels that are like either full, I love everything that Marvel has done and Marvel right. is perfect, or full, right. like, I hate this movie, it's garbage, the end. Yeah. And the truth is, with most Marvel movies, ultimately, some win, some are great, some are right. not, some win, some fail, but most of them have some good stuff and some bad stuff in it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that like, you know, when you brought up the Marvels, look, the Marvels is ultimately not a great movie.
Right.
Like ultimately it's just not a great movie. I think it kind of falls flat. It doesn't really get yep. moving. It has a lot of things that don't work for it, but I like the three actresses.
Yes.
Like I think that they all did a nice job. Yeah. I like the idea that Monica Rambeau got sent to another universe and is apparently with the X-Men right now. Like, yeah. I think that's interesting. Like, do I think they did everything perfectly? No, but that idea is interesting. And I think what we try and do on this channel, and sometimes yeah. maybe people think we are too good, nice about it or too whatever. I think that breaking down a movie and going, this did work, this did not work, here's yeah. why, is more interesting. Because that's as you're picking up the pieces and building the rest of your universe, you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Oh, well, this movie right. failed, so let's ignore all of it. Like, you shouldn't do that. Like, right. there's certain things in every movie that you're like, okay, I'm going to pick this piece out and this piece out. Like, we talk about this all the time. I yeah. think Thor 2, The Dark World, is probably one of the worst movies in the MCU.
Okay. I don't agree, but I know you feel that.
I know. Well, you and Shannon went without me and had a great time. But I think look, in my, like, and I don't think it's the worst, but I mean, when you're putting every Marvel movie that exists in a ranking,
yeah.
even if you like Thor 2, The Dark World, like, it's down towards the bottom.
Well, they still made it work by using it in Endgame, right? Using that ether, using all that stuff, the red matter.
That's my point. Yeah, yeah. Not only that, but like that's the movie where Loki and Thor's relationship was really solidified. I think Loki, Tom Hiddleston's performance in Thor 1 is good, but he's not the Loki that we love.
Right.
I think the Loki that we love happened in Thor 2, even though it's a bad movie.
Right.
Even though the ether was kind of whatever, like using that as one of the Infinity Stones and going back to that, to your point, in Endgame, like it all worked. So even in the Marvel movies that I don't like, even in Thor 4, even in Multiverse of Madness, which I really don't like those movies, there's pieces of that stuff. They're like, okay, pick up that piece and run with it. So that's what they need to be doing now. We'll see where it goes. But it's going to be 2025 is going to be the year that kind of makes or breaks the MCU, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Might be fun to maybe get us into CinemaCon, the three of us, for a Vegas trip. That could be a lot of fun, just throwing it out.
I'm still dealing with my Japan trip. I can't function. I can't functionally think about a Vegas trip at this time. I think my liver just like rebelled inside my body. But yes.
A mini Comic-Con trip. All right. Before we leave the superhero stuff and take a break, I've got to ask you about this. James Gunn was not there. He was there over Zoom. It was not there live at CinemaCon Vegas for the Warner Brothers panel, but he debuted the new logo. This is the new logo, Michael. I asked Shannon about it on the show the other day, but I know I have to go to the resident Superman expert to get his points of views on this particular logo. This is very similar to what we saw earlier with the Fortress of Solitude and the outfit that he was wearing, kind of teasing where we're going with that. But what do you think about this as an avid Superman fan of that logo? Do you like that logo?
I kind of like, here's my honest answer. Ooh. Is I have no opinion either way. Like, I don't have an opinion on the logo until I see it contextually in the movie. Like, I like it. It's gotcha, very pretty. Gotcha. It's a good looking logo. I like that it's a little bit different than the things that we've seen before.
Yeah.
I like that it's not exactly the Christopher Reeve logo. Like, I like that they're doing something a little bit different. But until I know the why of the logo, like, oh, this is the Kryptonian letter for this, or this is, you know, Ma Kent made this for me, or like, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
I want to see why it's this logo. But as far as doing something different and having something a bit more stylized and having a Superman logo that is specific to this new Superman and not kind of calling back to any of the other Superman films, I think is a good idea.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Fair point. All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump into a couple of trailers here on our way to that X-Men 97 episode 5 review right after this.
Johnny, if there was a cornerstone to the friendship that you, myself, and Mr. Michael Vogel have shared for 25 plus years, what would you say it was?
Well, I'd have to say it was movies, Shannon. Of course, that's where the Geek Buddies and our friendship was born, really, is going to see these movies, talking about them afterwards, whether we went opening night, opening weekend, opening week. It was so much fun seeing all these movies. And I know, like me, you are someone who enjoys seeing a lot of movies. And a way you can do that is by joining Regal Unlimited. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass that pays for itself in just two visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime with no blackout dates or restrictions. If you want to watch a movie in 4DX, IMAX, RPX, or ScreenX, your Regal Unlimited membership lets you do that at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you won't just save money on tickets, you'll also save on snacks. Members get 10% off on all non-alcoholic concession items.
What's a movie without popcorn, am I right? So for you, dear listener, if you're planning to see just two movies this month, you need to join Regal Unlimited. Sign up now in the Regal app or on their website at regmovies.com/unlimited. Now, if you sign up for Regal Unlimited using code GEEKBUDDY, that's just one word, GEEKBUDDY, you will earn 10% off a three-month subscription. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass that pays for itself in just two visits.
Hello, Geek Buddies fans. Before we jump into today's episode, let's give a warm thank you to our sponsor, Marquee TV. Their support is why we're able to bring this podcast to you. Marquee TV isn't just any streaming service. They're your gateway to an incredible world of arts and culture.
That's right, Johnny. I've explored Marquee TV, and I've been amazed by their vast library of performances, exclusive interviews, and behind-the-scenes content. It is a treasure trove for any arts and culture lover. Right now, I'm in the middle of watching the Royal Shakespeare Company's production production of The Tempest, and I've also got my eye on that Shakespeare masterclass taught by Dame Judi Dench.
Yeah, Shannon, and speaking of the RSC, I watched Christopher Eccleston's performance of Macbeth last night, and I'm going to jump into Kit Harington's performance of Henry V from the Donmar Warehouse.
Imagine having the world's most breathtaking ballets, dramatic theater productions, and magical operas at your fingertips. That's the experience Marquee TV offers, making the arts accessible wherever you are.
And we've got a special treat for our listeners. Marquee TV offers 3 months of access for just 99 cents. That's right, 3 months for only 99 cents with the code BUDDIES, B-U-D-D-I-E-S. Simply visit Marquee.tv and use the promo code BUDDIES to dive into the world of arts like never before. Bring the arts home with Marquee TV. Get 3 months for just 99 cents. Visit Marquee.tv to start your journey into the world of arts now. Use code BUDDIES.
Explore the extensive library of performances on Marquee TV today and keep up with the latest in art streaming by following at Marquee TV on social media.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
You don't have to do it.
Guys, I don't got it in me.
Yeah, I got it. I got it in me. I'm going to have to work on a song we can play there so Shannon doesn't have to always carry the load. All right, let's head on. Well, let's head on back into things. Michael, we got ourselves a massive trailer that dropped earlier this week that also debuted at CinemaCon. An odd time at 6 p.m. PT at night, 9 p.m. ET. It debuted the other night. I think it was Tuesday night here. It is Joker Folie à Deux. Getting to see 2.5 minutes of a teaser trailer here for the Joker, debuting Lady Gaga, debuting her as Harley Quinzel, and then with musical aspects to it all as well. We get to see Brendan Gleeson. We got to see other things going on. But overall, a teaser trailer didn't tell us too much of the story, but a lot of questions coming out of this. Is she still a psychiatrist? She seems to be in the prison. She seems to be a part of the people who are in the Arkham Asylum, but then she's the one that says, let's get out of here. We see them maybe hosting a talk show, a variety show, or whatever, and we see them dancing there on the roof, as I showed, kind of like La La Land. I called it Ha Ha Land. Thank you. And this, and then by the end, the little smile on the window, clearly on opposite sides of the window. So your thoughts on this trailer, what do you think we're getting out of it, and what was your feeling? Do you think that we're going to see another one that rivals the Joker film from 2019?
I think we are.
Yeah? Okay.
Like, I think we are. Like, this trailer blew me away.
Yeah.
This trailer absolutely knocked me on my ass. Like, I think it was so high style. Yeah. So, like, major, big concept stuff. I just am, like, I'm fully invested in this movie. I think the audience for this movie is going to be insane on opening night, where you're going to have hardcore comic book fans, anarchists, and a bunch of gay guys who are obsessed with Lady Gaga and musicals. And they're all going to be in the theater at the same time. And it's going to be wild. Like, it's just going to be absolutely insane. To the point of, is Harley because I've seen a lot of people talking about it, and I had the same questions, like, well, is she going to be his therapist? Is she not? I don't think it matters.
Oh, interesting.
Like to me, this is like, you know, prior to Dark Knight coming out, if you ask somebody, what do you need the Joker to be? There would be a lot of, well, he needs to be the Red Hood. He needs to be this. Batman puts him in a vat of acid. That's what happens to his face. Da, da, da. They did none of that.
Yeah.
Like Heath Ledger's Joker, the details were very vague purposely. He kind of told a different story every time about his origin. The paint was kind of put on his face. Like you didn't really know why any of it.
Yeah.
And I think that most people would say that Heath Ledger's Joker is one of the most Joker representations of Joker that we've gotten, and the details weren't the same. Right. So I love the Harley Quinn origin story. I love her being the Joker's therapist and him sort of like, you know, like getting her more and more involved and more in love with him and then her breaking him out. It's a great story.
Yeah.
This Joker from the first movie is not necessarily our Joker.
Mm.
And so if this Harley is not necessarily our Harley and she's another inmate and they have this bond or whatever it is that happens, like they've earned the right to tell the story they want to tell.
Yeah.
You know, like that first movie, even though, again, it's not exactly our Joker, it's such a great and powerful and unsettling movie in so many ways. And to follow it up by bringing Harley in into the second movie and doing their version of Harley.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go ding them on comic book accuracy and, well, the actual Harley story is this and how dare you ruin it. Like, I'm going to wait and see what they do and roll with it. And the fact that they followed up a movie that was so controversial that people were afraid, people like the entire, like, don't go see Joker in theaters, people are going to be anarchists and like come shoot you, like all of the fears around that. And they followed it up with this thing that's a high concept musical. Like, go to town, y'all. I'm ready. Bring it to me. October can't get, like, and if this movie got nominated, I mean, based on the teaser trailer, I might not say this when I see the movie, based on the teaser trailer, this movie is another superhero movie that looks like it's an Oscar contender.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's no mistake that they're dropping it in the fall, Michael.
Right.
There's no mistake. They're dropping this in October in the fall to get people on board with the possibility this could be yet another film that gets nominated for Best Picture, and Joaquin might get another nomination. Gaga might get nominated finally. So it could be interesting to see. And Todd Phillips might get nominated as well if he pulls this off. Right. Cause you're right. I mean, to follow up a gritty 70s commentary on society and how we treat people who are suffering through mental health or the lesser segments of our society economically or politically or socially, with a musical that's about, you know, him finding someone that he might love. And who knows if this is all in his head or not, because as we saw in the first Joker movie, the whole relationship with Zazie Beetz was all in his head. So is this all in his head? Are they sharing the delusion like the title suggests? I don't know. So the fact that there's all this mystery out of a teaser trailer, they accomplished the mission, which was to get people excited and also piss off those people who didn't like the first Joker movie. I saw them all over Twitter as well saying we're glorifying blah, 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 blah. So it accomplished its goal, because in the end, if this thing works, it's probably going to make a billion again, I think.
Yeah. Well, and I think it also proved, I mean, like I was talking about this earlier with somebody and I know we're about to talk about X-Men in a minute.
Yeah.
I think what the Joker 2 trailer does and what X-Men 97, particularly episode 5, has done is like, we actually don't have superhero fatigue, guys.
Yeah.
There is no superhero fatigue.
Right.
We have bad movie fatigue.
Sure. Yes.
Like 100%. we don't like mediocre movies.
Yeah.
And we don't like mediocre movies, whether people are in tights with superpowers or they're not. We just don't like mediocre movies.
Right.
And there was a time where we were all so into everything that we were like, fans were like, I'm going to see it. We've become a little bit more discerning.
Yeah.
And the way that you grab us and keep us invested is do really high concept stuff like that Joker 2 trailer, or tell a story that like knocks the walls off what you can do in animation, like they're doing in X-Men 97. And so like, I think that what you're seeing is like the good stuff is still out there. And when stuff is good, there's no superhero fatigue.
No, people loving Invincible. People are about to probably love Boys season 4 when that comes out. So there is no fatigue. People enjoy this when it's good quality product. Even if by extension, by connection, Fallout, people are loving the Fallout series that's currently showing on Prime Video.
Yeah.
It's not superhero, but it's superhero adjacent in it being a video game and about post-apocalyptic stuff. And so there's connective tissues here. So if you do good work, people will watch this stuff. People will go to it. And I
if
think
you build it, if you build it, they will come.
Well, if you build it well, they will come. All right, let's move on to one more trailer here we should talk about. This also debuted this week, Mike. Star Wars Outlaws, speaking of video games like Fallout, here's a brand new video game. The story trailer dropped. It was about 2.5 minutes here, exploring the world that we get in Ubisoft's Star Wars Outlaw. We got to see Kay Vess in here more. We got to see Nyx, her adorable companion. And we saw more of the world here and more of the interactions that she is going to have on these numerous missions here and the characters that are going to be involved. And it's very much dealing with the underworld of Star Wars. So what do you think of the look and the feel? I've seen some reviews liking it, some reviews not liking it. What did you genuinely feel when you watched this trailer?
Excitement.
Okay.
It just looks fun.
Yeah.
I mean, and I love, you know, like with the Fallen, with the Jedi Fallen Order games, we got a game that really focused on the Jedi experience.
Right.
And I love that now we're getting into the smuggler experience, which is another key part of the Star Wars universe.
Yes.
And I just loved that it was its own thing. Like, I mean, it's in the Star Wars universe. It feels very Star Wars, but it's not relying on massive cameos or here's this character that you love. I mean, you know, maybe I'll eat my words when we play the game and it's not going to be this, but it wasn't like, oh, right, there's Cad Bane. It was just like, this is a very specific game, yeah, in the Star Wars universe with brand new characters, and it got all of the feel and the tone of it right.
Right.
And it just looked like really fun gameplay. I mean, given the Fallen Jedi, Jedi Fallen Order games, like, I have a high expectation when it comes to Star Wars gameplay because those games are a lot of fun.
Right.
The gameplay's awesome. The way you can do all the things you can do are really awesome. So this looks like it's in that vein.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I think that it had that spark of originality and excitement and fun,
yeah,
that I feel has been lacking in some of the other Star Wars media that we've been getting as of late.
Yeah, I like the mixture of new characters, and we got Jabba in this one, and we even got...
Oh, we did get Jabba. I take my words back. We did get... But like that, but I loved that.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know what?
Small section of the trailer, yeah.
Screw what I said. It's the jet lag talking. Like, we did have Jabba. Like, people are like, what is he talking about? Jabba's in the goddamn trailer. Yeah. But that made sense to me, and it was, again, it just felt like it worked. Yeah, I'm just jazzed for it. Like, I just think that as I'm wearing this BB-8 shirt, like, I'm going to be a Star Wars fan. I was saying this, I was talking in Japan with some friends of mine, and we were talking about Star Wars one night. And I was like, I'm going to be a fan of Star Wars until I'm dead.
Yeah.
Like, I know that. Like, and I know that, like, my bias is that I'll always love Star Wars. I'm going to watch every Star Wars thing. I'm watching every episode of The Bad Batch. Going to watch The Acolyte. I read the High Republic books. Like, I enjoy the world. But as someone who is also a storyteller, I recognize that some of the things I enjoy, I'm like, I like this because it's Star Wars. It's not great.
Right.
And some of the things I enjoy, I'm like, this is fucking great. This is great storytelling.
Yeah.
And I, even though I will always love Star Wars, there's been some stuff in the past couple of years that I've been like, I like this as a fan, but this is not great storytelling.
Yeah.
And the Outlaw trailer, like, it just looks like it has that right blend that's going to get me really invested and add a bunch of new characters to the Star Wars universe that I'm excited about.
Yeah, plus it's apparently going to soft relaunch Kira, which I think is going to be nice to bring that character back in the hopes that they will transfer over from Solo into live action again with Emilia Clarke probably coming back at some point down the road in the Star Wars universe. So that could be a lot of fun because there's obviously the Lando series that's going to happen here with Donald Glover, and a lot of people still want Alden Ehrenreich to come back as Solo. So that world, that movie, might still have something to say down the road in the Star Wars universe with the characters that were introduced in that film. So we will see, and the actors.
Yeah, I mean, I still feel like, and I mean, and the Outlaw game does fall into this category too. Like, we've talked about this 1,000 times, but I was just talking about it with my buddy in Japan, and I was saying, am I excited for the Lando series? Of course I am.
Right.
Am I going to be excited to see all these things? If they brought Kira back, like, I think she's a really great character. As we were saying before, like, that's a piece, even though Solo maybe is not the biggest hit that they've had, Kira and who she is and her story is interesting. So seeing those things, I'm always down for it. But I really want Star Wars to figure out what the next chapter of Star Wars is. And I know that, you know, that we've got the Rey movie coming up, which is supposed to do that. But like... Yeah. There's only so much that you can just fill in gaps and tell stories within this universe over and over and over again before you go, like, you gotta create more roadmap. Like, you gotta give us the next chapter. You gotta give us what happens after the First Order, like, after all these things. Like, and I think that that needs to happen sooner than later, or eventually we're all just going to be like, okay, cool. Tell us another story in this universe that takes place between this thing and this thing, where we know what's going to happen, but show us a fun adventure. That's fine.
Yeah.
But like, give us more.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, Star Wars Outlaws is debuting here on PC and the new gen consoles on August 30th of this year. And if you want to get the Ultimate Edition, it's $130, which will give you 3-day early access to the shooter game on August 27th. Woof, man, that's going to be some interesting situation there for sure. $130. All right, well, let's take another break here, our last break, and then we're going to jump into X-Men 97 Episode 5. So buckle in. We'll be right back right after this. You got one for that one. I appreciate that.
That one I got.
All right, let's talk about it, man. X-Men 97, episode 5. Let me bring up the picture so we talk about it here. What a episode here that saw, and this is a spoiler review, by the way. If you haven't seen it, get on the train. We are going to be spoiling things, but this one, Mike, what a fascinating episode. I was the last one to see it of our crew on the Geek Buddies theater text chain. You had seen it early because of Japan. Our friend JG had seen it early. He's on the East Coast. Shannon then saw it because of y'all's motivation. Then I finally saw it and recorded my reaction, but unfortunately couldn't quite get it edited in time, so it is lost to the ether. But this episode here, basically focusing on the island of Genosha, or the land of Genosha, and it becoming a UN-sanctioned state there, and what happens between Remy and Rogue and Magneto, but then, boom, what happens near the end of this when Sentinels come from the future and essentially wipe out all these mutants who are living in essentially a mutant mutant land that they can be free to be themselves and enjoy themselves for the first time ever. And it led to some massive things at the end, big surprises, some deaths, some shocking moments here. So your overall thoughts on this, Michael, because it's a pretty simple, like, log line, but so much happened that was much more complex and echoes and reverberates through the halls of through the world of X-Men 97. Your thoughts?
I mean, it's an amazing episode of television.
Yeah.
Like, it's just an amazing episode of television, period. And it's an amazing episode of television because it's shocking. Mm. It has major stakes to the universe, and it just is firing on all cylinders. And it gets to the heart of what X-Men is really about.
Yeah.
They pull a fast one on you. Like, I kind of settled in. Like, I saw it came out early. I'd watched the clip that they had released of Kurt, Nightcrawler, seeing Rogue and Gambit for the first time on Genosha. And I was like, all right, this is going to be a fun one. It's going to be a fun episode. So I settled in to watch it, enjoying it. I'm like, oh, they get to Genosha and they play like the X-Men theme on steel drums. And Genosha has this sort of like almost Wakanda vibe in it.
Yeah,
of, like, this, like whereas rock, Wakanda is sort of Afrofuturism, kind of like this. Here's what an African city would look like with no influence from the outside world. Genosha was very much like, this is a mutant city built by mutants for mutants. Like, this is our culture, our civilization. And it was just a good time. I'm like, okay, we're gonna like move this story forward. All right, we've got Emma Frost, we've got Moira McTaggart, we got everybody, like, great, let's have the whole gang here. And then like they drop the bomb literally and have something happen that's so horrible. And I think like what made it great is I think Sentinels have almost become, I don't want to say a joke, but because the Sentinels are always the thing that the X-Men fight, like
we saw it in episode one,
like we saw the X-Men just trash a bunch of Sentinels in the Master Mold.
Yeah.
And even the Konami game episode from last week, where we kind of saw, like, we all remember like fighting Sentinels in the Konami game. Like, the Sentinels were just this thing that were like, oh, they're going to kill mutants, but they were pretty easy to take down. They're kind of, okay, Sentinels or whatever. So having Sentinels show up and do exactly what they were designed to do was kind of horrifying.
Yeah.
And it just, I mean, the best part was our buddy Brian and I, like, we were both, he was who I went to Japan with.
Yeah.
And in Tokyo, we had separate rooms. So we both, like, were out doing stuff. I came back to my room and I'm like, oh, shit, X-Men already, like, dropped, so we can watch it now. He's like, oh, cool. So he started it like 10 minutes before I did. So I'm like texting him and I'm like, oh man, this episode is so much fun. And he was like, how far in are you? And I was like, oh, I only have like 10 minutes left. And he's like, text me when you're done. I'm like, okay. And like, what a difference 10 minutes can
yeah,
make.
Yeah, right?
So then I like text him. I'm like, well, now I'm sobbing. Like yeah. now I'm a wreck. Yeah. It was really powerful. And not only was that part of it great,
yeah.
but all of the other stuff, like the Jean Scott, Madeline stuff.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes.
Kind of having Trish Trilby there to kind of like interviewing everybody and having this is the way the world looks at mutants, like Scott Summers breaking down and just spitting truth about how it really feels to be a mutant, like Wolverine and Jean, like all of the drama, the Gambit and Rogue drama, the Rogue and Magneto drama, like all of it, like you had all of this soap opera level relationship stuff that all kind of comes crashing to a stop in the face of this like ultimate terror, which when Bo DiMaio came out on Twitter and talked about like what he wanted to do with this episode, really gets to the heart of what it's like to have something on that level happen.
Yeah, Bo DiMaio tweeted out saying a lot of questions and so I'll momentarily break silence to answer. Episode 5 was the centerpiece of my pitch to Marvel in November of 2020. The idea being to have the X-Men mirror the journey that any of us who grew up on the original show have experienced since being kids in the 90s. The world was a seemingly safer place for us, where a character like Storm would comment on how skin-based racism was quaint in One Man's Worth. For the most part, to our young minds, the world was a simple place of right and wrong, where questions about identity and social justice had relatively clear-cut answers. Things weren't so safe anymore, he said. After the September 11th attacks, grassroots populist movements began to rise around the world as a whole nation struggled to deal with collective trauma and fracture at the seams of every diverse demographic. Certainly, we're still dealing with that now. That's my own commentary. We're very clearly dealing with that with our world nowadays. He said the effects we still feel today have only exacerbated by more collective traumas like COVID or several recessions, and then talked about what Michael is alluding to, the massive shocks that happened at the end of the episode here with Gambit and Magneto. He wanted that to reflect the pain of real-life attacks on safe spaces and connected it to what happened in Charlottesville and what happened at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this episode with you, Michael, is because you are, of course, a member of the LGBTQA community. You are you've been my friend for over two decades now, and very proud to have you on the show and love doing the show with you. And there are insights to certain things that I don't have as a straight male in this country. And when you're seeing an episode like this, I can connect to it like, okay, I know what it's like to be a person of color and see people, you know, who want to kind of live their life in their own way, have hate come to them, even from the future, to try to efficiently destroy them because they fear them, don't like them, they're intimidated by them. And when you balance that out with what Scott breaks down and has his moment of anger with Trish and says, we've got to work three times as hard just to get you all to accept us as normal. It's super frustrating. All of that mixed in here, I thought there was a lot I could connect to, but the specificity that Bo DiMaio was coming from, I want to get your thoughts on that. Like, as a gay man watching this, were you feeling it and sensing it? Even without Bo saying it on social media, did you sense that this was very much a commentary on how the treatment of the LGBTQIA plus community has been over the last few years, and especially the last couple of years with the attacks?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think a couple things. One, mutants work for anyone who's ever felt like an oppressed minority. It's not just gay people. Fair and point. Like when X-Men first came out, it very much worked for people of color, and it still does. Like, I think that's why lots of people who are from any kind of minority group, you know, whether that's ethnic, group. Religious, yeah, or yeah. other group, have always been drawn to the X-Men because there's always those stories that relate. To me, one of the reasons that gay people particularly, LGBTQ people, queer people in general, are drawn to the X-Men is the parallel of, and I could be wrong about this, and in the comments, anybody can point out, but like, if you grow up as a person of color, if you grow up having a religious belief, if you grow up anything, you are usually growing up in a family group or community that is of that same group. Like if you're born Black, you're born Latin, you're born Jewish, you're born Muslim, you grow up and you have a Muslim family or a Black family. And at some point they're going to say, hey, this is what it's like growing up being this. When you're gay, you grow up in a whatever family. And then at some point when you hit puberty, you go, oh, I'm different.
Yeah.
And there's nobody to talk to about it. Like there's nobody, you can't go to your mom and dad and be like, so what's it like being gay? Cause you don't want to tell any, you don't want to tell your parents you're gay. You don't want to tell your friends. Like, so you're sort of lost. And then eventually you start to find other people in your group. And that is very much like the mutant experience. Like you're living your life as a homo sapien all of a sudden your mutant power manifests, you become homo superior, and your family sometimes kicks you out, your friends all of a sudden turn their back on you, and right. you end up finding other mutants. And that's like a really powerful parallel to what it's like growing up LGBTQ. So that's why I think in general, gays are like, we love the X-Men. The other part of it, I mean, the Pulse nightclub thing that Bode Mayo talked about, like I remember the Pulse nightclub shooting happened we found out about it the morning of Gay Pride in Los Angeles. So I remember waking up and I had all these plans to like meet up with my friends and go celebrate and go to the Gay Pride parade. And we're going to do all these things. And then you wake up and you check your phone and you find out about this horrible massacre, this shooting that happened in Orlando. And it like just rocked everybody's day. Like I remember I went over to my friend's house who we were having brunch before the parade, walked in and he like burst into tears. Mm. And then we all just sat there watching the news in the opposite way that we thought we'd be celebrating. Right. And I had a bunch of friends who then were like, I'm not going to come out today. I'm too scared. Like after what happened, I'm worried about being in a big group. I don't want to go somewhere where there's a bunch of gay people today.
Right.
And just that sort of feeling of something that was supposed to be such a joyous day became a completely different kind of day because a bunch of people had been killed for being what you were, like just being like for just existing and partying and dancing at a nightclub, which is supposed to be fun. So watching this episode, having it start with Genosha being just awesome.
Yeah.
And like, not only like awesome within the show, like, oh, look at all these mutants that are just so happy. But then all of the Easter eggs as a fan of being like, oh, there's Pixie. Oh, there's Morrow. There's this person. There's that person. Like, it was like, this is fun. This is so awesome. And then you have this amazing party and Rogue shows up and the Ace of Base song comes on and you're like, oh my God. Yeah. Like, okay, we got a bunch of soap opera drama. Is she going to pick Magneto or is she going to pick Gambit? Right. Like, oh my God, the mutants are really like, this is great. And then the attack happens so suddenly and so violently.
And out of nowhere with no, any kind of warning and it just happens. Right.
And that's, and that's where I think, Bo did a really good job making it feel like that. Like that's the feeling of it was almost disorienting. It was, we're having this moment and we're really focused on, oh, Rogue just told Magneto, sorry, I'm going to stick with Remy. It's some things are more than skin deep. And then out of nowhere, I mean, Cable shows up and gives like a split seconds worth of warning to Madeline. But other than that, the attack just happened so suddenly and everyone is disoriented. Like, what the fuck just happened? And then the Sentinels actually were effective. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the other thing is we're so used to Sentinels being a threat that usually is neutralized. Like Wolverine is going to jump up and like slash the thing or Scott Summers is going to blow it away and it's going to be fine. They're going to save the mutants and it's going to be good. And this was in one moment, like thousands of people were dead.
Yeah.
And which is horrible for us in a very kind of, oh, that's a horrible tragedy sense.
Right.
But then it just kept getting worse. Like Magneto got thrown into the statue of Charles Xavier and that statue goes over and just smashes a bunch more mutants just instantly dead. And then you're like, oh, that's horrible. And then you're like, oh, well, we got to go save the Morlocks because Magneto said he was going to save the Morlocks. So you like go and Gambit has this awesome moment saving the Morlocks. And then, like, the Morlocks all die.
Yeah.
With Magneto. Then Magneto has this moment where he's trying to protect them. And he's protecting them. He's keeping Rogue and Gambit over here. Yeah. And then he just looks at Leech and in German says, don't be afraid. And I know people were talking about it online that, like, a lot of people who speak multiple languages, like, in a moment of intense anxiety – just revert back to their foreign tongue. So the fact that he looked and said that to Leech in German, particularly after we just saw him have a bunch of like flashbacks, like the fact that it was like, oh, he sees mutants dying. He sees this. And then he sees a concentration camp.
Right. Right.
And he's remembering like that his family was all killed in the Holocaust. Like, don't be afraid in German, like hit hard. And then you're like, okay, Magneto's dead. This is horrible.
Yeah.
And then the Gambit thing happens.
Yeah, because Rogue had just broken off the relationship with Magneto, refusing to be the queen of Genosha, which Magneto had asked her to be. That was his one requirement. And so she comes, she essentially is sacrificing herself because we get the story of how they came together and how their relationship came together, why they ended up having this romance and what have you. And so that's what motivates her in that moment to start running to essentially a suicide mission, in essence. And Gambit, who had just accepted her in a non-toxic way, choosing Magneto, sacrifices, pushes her out of the way, and then sacrifices himself to save her. It's such a powerful moment. And an ally stepping forward to fight the fight there and take the hit as well.
Well, yeah, and I mean, to your point, I mean, the fact that that whole way, that like, you could, as much soap opera as X-Men has going for it,
I mean,
you could have had Remy storm off and be mad that he wasn't chosen, but he was like, this is the decision you've made and we're always going to be friends.
Yep.
I think he's going to break your heart, but I'm always going to be your friend. And he goes off. And then to do what he did, and like the, just the Sentinel sort of like that cable just like stabbing into his side.
Yeah.
And then just the pure awesomeness of his moment of like, the name's Gambit, remember it. And then using his mutant ability to charge up that, like, it was just absolutely amazing. And as Beau DeMaio also said, like, this is the halfway point of the season, and the back half of this season is going to just be the repercussions of this.
Wow.
And that's going to be insane. I mean, that it just, it was just storytelling at its finest.
Yeah.
Because the, you know, a lot of people, it's, I got in this conversation with somebody recently where they were like, we were talking about Invincible, but they were like, do you think people just like violence in cartoons, because in animation, because it's like, you haven't seen it before and it's shocking and it's cool to see violence in a way you haven't. And I'm like, I don't think that's what it is. Like, there's plenty of violence to see in the world. And I don't think that people crave violence for violence's sake. It's not like I watched this episode and said, oh, wow, that was violent. It was so awesome.
Yeah, right.
But what violence usually comes with is stakes.
Yeah.
It's real stakes. We're used to, and this is what Beau DeMaio was saying, we're used to episode one of X-Men 97. Oh, look, here's a bunch of Sentinels. Let's watch the mutants fight them. Oh, look, Rogue flipped one over. Wolverine just sliced one up. Hank McCoy took control of one, and then Storm came in and used her powers to wipe them. Yeah, look how awesome the X-Men are. Yeah. So when there's all of a sudden, it can get real. All of a sudden, like, beloved characters are killed. It affects us deeply because now, like, we feel very unsafe. We're like, we don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. And it also makes us so invested in the story. It's the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones. It's that moment where you're like, oh shit, just because someone's a main character doesn't mean they're safe. This world is dangerous. I don't know what's going to happen next. I'm super invested and I'm really emotionally connected to these characters. And I think that's what, having the whole drama between Rogue and Gambit and Magneto in the first half of this isn't like accidental.
Yeah.
Like the fact that you have all of these intense emotions and that Rogue really does have feelings for Magneto. He has feelings for her, but she also has feelings for Gambit. She tells Gambit she's going to be with Magneto. Then she changes her mind. But before she can steal Gambit, all this stuff happens. It's like, that's what makes it so affecting and so tragic.
Yeah. 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 And the number of people who pass away in this one, Screen Rant did a breakdown of Comic Book Resources. You know, Madeline Pryor gets blown up in this one right after having that interaction with her son, when she realizes it's Nathaniel. Banshee gets incinerated, which is one of my quietly favorite X-Men. So to see him being incinerated, I was super unhappy about this. Marrow is raised as well with Banshee. Sebastian Shaw dies off screen, not Sebastian Stan. Callisto dies there right in front of our eyes. Moira McTaggart dies off screen, who I love as well. Squid Boy dies off screen, as we've talked about Magneto. And then the Morlocks and, of course, Gambit. Yep. So that's a fucking hell of a lot of a death count. 5 episodes into a season, Michael. So, like, if you're coming to this new, and maybe you've read the comics, you feel that, even though you're only 5 episodes into a season, because you've got knowledge of these characters. But even if you didn't, right, you're looking at this, it's presented to you from the beginning as this kind of island paradise of mutants where they finally get to be themselves and get to not be afraid and get to enjoy their life. And then when those final minutes happen, you're like, God, hate is always going to find a way to try to destroy people who are different from them living their lives. They're always going to find a reason to try to destroy it or eradicate or kill them. And so to me, I had a good cry after this episode of anger because of what I see happening in the world and what I see people wanting to do to these disenfranchised communities, to these communities who are really a small part of our populace and want to use them and scapegoat them and destroy them for their own nefarious reasons and dress it up with whatever reasoning they want to dress up that's convenient for them, whether it's social or religious or their own personal tastes. And it's super just painful to see that kind of thing happening. And I think this episode really nailed it. And having legitimate deaths, having deaths that are notable, were necessary in order to hammer that point home.
Yeah, I mean, 100% all of that. Like that, that this is like, and I think that's what X-Men is really about.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this is like, this is why X-Men has endured for so long. It's why people love the X-Men so much. And yeah, as far as where we go from here, like,
where do we
go? I'm almost scared about these last, because in addition to all of that, which we've talked about, which is all amazing, you still have, I mean, Scott was psychically cheating on Jean with Madeline because Madeline's the father, the mother of his son, and he's very confused. And now Madeline is gone. So Scott Summers is going to be grieving that while he's also grieving the fact that his son was sent to the future, while he's also grieving the fact that the person who he's supposed to be in love with, he now has this very fractured relationship with. Scott Summers is about to break. And if you read the Uncanny X-Men run back in the, you know, what a couple years back, where he really like went off after, after the whole Avengers versus X-Men saga, where he got the Phoenix Force and killed Professor X and a bunch of shit went down, when Scott breaks and just goes full, like, fuck everybody, I'm here for the mutants, like, and that's it. It's pretty fantastic. And given the speech that he gave in this episode, I think he's pretty close to the breaking point. And this doesn't even touch on the Forge, Storm, adversary storyline that's happening over here from the end of the of episode four. And so in the wake of all of this stuff that's going on and this Genosha moment happens, like, where we go next, aside from the fact that we all saw the trailer with the Captain America shield in it, like it's about to get, it's about to get real, real wild.
Don't forget Logan and Jean having a kiss. Like, I mean, she's not innocent in all of this either. Jean gave into her moments while she just finished talking about Scott. She gave into her feelings for Logan, and Logan was the one that was like, we can't, we got to slow down. It's you. It's you too. I can't be a part of this. Even though he wants to be a part of this, he's the one that pulls back. How is that? Jean still felt that she could yell at Scott for psychically cheating on her after she essentially cheated on him. So there's a lot, as you said, the soap opera drama of this is essential, like, for X-Men, but there's a lot to untangle here, man.
Jean and Scott are at their best when they are messy, and they were not, they have not been any messier than they could be in this episode. Like, it was a mess. And poor Madeline, like, Madeline looked like she had really figured some shit out. And then, like, to your point, the moment between her and Cable, just so fucking awful. She recognizes him, and then he just, he gets pulled back, and he's like, I'm sorry, mom. Like, I mean, they hits just kept on hitting in this episode. And I can't, as a gay man, go by without mentioning that while all this is going on, Emma Frost is just like in the middle of all of it, being as bitchy as Emma Frost is supposed to be. Like, I love Emma Frost so much. And when Madeline got caught cheating and said that her mind had drifted, and Emma smirked and said, drifted indeed, I was like, that's Emma Frost. That bitch. That bitch right there is Emma Frost. Loved it. Or when Valerie Cooper, who we're all pretty sure is Mystique at this point, comes up and says, we have a problem. And Emma's response is it your dress? Perfect Emma line.
Agreed. All right. Anything more to say on this episode, man? I think we've covered the really big spots here in this episode and the storylines, but is there anything more to say on this one, man?
Do we think Magneto's dead for sure? Do we think Magneto's gone? Do we think he's coming back? What do we think?
Magneto was right. He's emblazoned all over social media for the last few days. So no, I think in no way is he dead. And you know, comics, none of these people are dead. They're going to come back at some point, but the point of the episode will still resonate. Will still have weight. Will still matter.
I don't know, man. I think Gambit's dead. Road.
You think Gambit's dead? For real?
I think Gambit's dead, dead.
Do you think Madeline Pryor's dead, dead?
TBD. Madeline Pryor. Okay. Well, so here's the thing. And look, you are correct. In comic books in general, and in X-Men comics specifically, almost nobody stays dead forever. So anybody could come back at any time because X-Men is wild. Okay. But the people that are most often, Jean Grey can almost never die. Like, as soon as you get that Phoenix Force going in you, like, it's a Phoenix Force for a reason. And because we don't know when Madeline and Jean switch places, we don't know how much of the Phoenix Force is in Madeline. Like, Madeline Pryor is a dead for now with a giant asterisk at the end of it.
I would agree with that.
And Magneto is another character who has been resurrected time and time again. the real, and I don't think Magneto's coming back like next week.
Right.
But I think that, you know, given the end of the X-Men series in the 90s, we keep saying Charles Xavier is dead, but the very end of that episode is Charles Xavier was taken off to the Shi'ar Empire and they were like, he's out there.
Right.
And I think that like, there might be a moment where down the road, Professor X and Magneto come back, and Magneto, as much as he was trying to be the good guy and be what Charles Xavier wanted him to be.
Yeah.
I don't know if he does come back, a Magneto who just experienced what he experienced on Genosha, has no time for humanity anymore.
Oh my God. Yes.
Is fucking done. Like a Magneto that comes back after this is like, and what they've done with all the Magneto is right banners that we've been seeing all over Twitter is like, you get to the end of this episode and you're like, Charles, I love you, but Magneto's right. Like, fuck, like, come on. Like, it's easy to debate it in like moral, ethical theory. But when you watch something like episode 5, I think if you love the X-Men, you get done with this episode, you're like, all right, fuck humanity. I'm out. Fuck humanity. Mutants, do what you gotta do. I'm good. Magneto's right.
We are the future, Charles, not them.
So it's going to be, it's going to be wild. These next 5 episodes are going to be absolutely wild. Like this has gone from a show that I'm like, this is a really, X-Men 97. It's so fun. It makes me feel like the 90s. It feels like Saturday morning all over again, which is what everybody was saying after those first couple episodes. It's gone from that to this is like appointment television. I have to watch this as soon as it comes out. Holy shit. What's going to happen next? And that's amazing. As I was saying before, this is where you're like, okay, apparently we don't have superhero fatigue.
Yeah, no. The way social media blew up over this episode, no fucking way we don't. And the whole season, really. People have been loving X-Men 97. So, and this was smart to put it as the kind of a mid-season finale, and then boom, we're going to jump in to see what happens over these next 5 episodes. Like you said, there's so many things to untangle and so many storylines to explore and see what more there is to come here as we go along. So whatever happened behind the scenes, we can't obviously speculate on or know about, but aside from that, Bo DeMeo has written an incredible season so far and deserves all the fucking flowers for it. Cause this episode is like the cherry on top of the first 5 episodes. Now let's see what we're going to get in these back 5. She says he's just getting warmed up, which is fucking crazy to me, man. So, all right, but there you go. That's our episode here of Geek Buddy / Geek Bites here from the Geek Buddies. We appreciate you all hanging out with us. Hope you enjoyed our conversations that we had here on everything. Michael, what do we have to tell them?
Well, if you would like to follow us, you can do so on Twitter at Geek_Buddies, on Instagram at @the_Geek_Buddies. And if you would like to follow me, you can do so at MKToon, and you can follow Mr. Roca at The Roca Says.
Yeah, and you can follow Shannon at Shannon the Geek Buddy there, or Shannon _McClung there, wherever you go on your social medias. Please remember to subscribe to the channel down below. Hit that bell button so you see we're dropping all the content we do here. And as Michael would normally say, if you liked everything we had to talk about or didn't like everything we had to talk about, let us know in the comments section below what worked for you, what didn't work for you, what you thought about everything, what you thought about our thoughts on X-Men 97 Episode 5, and also the trailers that we've spoken about and the CinemaCon stuff that happened with Marvel and DC. Let us know all your thoughts. We appreciate it madly. Thank you so much for watching or for listening to us. Remember, we are a podcast as well, so go and listen to us and subscribe to us there on the podcast as well. And for my partner, Michael Vogel, I am the Outlaw John Roca, and this has been an episode of The
Geek
Buddies!
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the spirit?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridans, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.